say, having watched what's happened over the last two, I've been working for Crikey for about 2 years, and I've been covering the climate change debate, the ETS debate, all the way through, and I've watched as the debate over the detail of the ETS, which was a kind of a bipartisan consensus on what to do about climate change, got debauched by and turned into what I think is the greatest public policy failure in certainly in federal government history. But then it got even worse, because then we lost the bipartisan consensus on climate change, and we're stuck with one of the sides of politics being run by climate denialists. So things have gone from bad to worse, and I think that trajectory has been followed in the media, because the sceptics and the denialists, and I think the group we're talking about is 10% sceptics, who are people I might have some sort of respect for, or at least appreciate their intellectual credibility, and the other 90% are the denialists who are straight out naysayers. So I think the key message I wanted to get across is that I think we need to fundamentally change the nature of the debate in Australia, and I think this is probably mirrored right across the Western world. Because, not to be too dramatic, but look, in essence, I think there's been a war declared on our younger generations, and I think that war's been lost. It's an economic war, but it's going to exact a very, very heavy toll, and the toll is going to be paid by young people today, by our children, my children, and by generations as yet unborn. Those generations, they'll pay extra taxes, they'll pay higher insurance, they'll pay higher food prices, they'll have fewer jobs, they'll benefit from lower economic growth, they will suffer greater health impacts, a whole variety of very, very substantial costs as a consequence of climate change. And they'll be stuck with the costs of adaptation as well. So they'll get it both ways. They'll have to pay the cost, and they'll have to pay for trying to fix the mess. And every day, of course, that we delay taking action on climate change, those costs go up in the future. And to the extent that denialists are responsible for that delay, responsible for the breakdown of what was a bipartisan consensus on doing something about climate change, responsible for governments getting cold feet, responsible for what is this, I think, enormous backward step that's occurred in the last 16 months in terms of the public's understanding of climate change, then they are responsible for those costs. And that's why I say that, that in essence, it's been a declaration of economic war on younger generations and generations as yet unborn. And because of that, I think we, and particularly younger people who are the victims of this, need to get personal about this. I think that's probably my key message. It's personal for them. It's personal for all of us. Even if you don't have kids, if you value the future, if you value a equitable society, it's personal for all of us. This is a declaration of war on all of us, and I think it's time that we conveyed just how personal it is back to the denialists. I want to talk for a moment about who we're actually up against in this conflict. There's no groundswell of climate denialism going on. At least I don't think. I mean, you can preface my entire speech with the phrase I think. But I don't sense any groundswell of denialism. I sense a groundswell of confusion that has been deliberately sown and successfully sown by denialists who are, say, over and over again, 2 + 2 = 4. And if they say it long enough and loud enough and with sufficient vigour, then people start to say, well, hang on, maybe 2 + 2 = 4. That's what I think that is literally what we're seeing. And even, well-read and intelligent people, and I encounter them, say to me, well, what's going on with those emails? And I mean, this climate of distrust has been successfully sown by the denialists. But they're not, the denialists aren't some secret army, all right? We can say who they are. We can identify them. And once you can put a face to these people, I think it's sort of I think it makes it a little bit easier to actually to respond to them. They've got a particular demographic, and I don't want to demonise a whole demographic. Climate denialists are... I haven't gotten all the way through that caveat yet, so bear with me. Look, climate denialists do tend to be older. They tend to be over 50 and particularly over 65. I've seen research which shows that, particularly for over 65s, there is a real gulf between them and younger generations. And it's not just across climate change, it's across a whole bunch of issues, and it's particularly across voting intentions. I mean, they are really preponderantly coalition voters, so it's particularly amongst that group. That's not to say that there aren't people who are of that age group and people who are even older than me who have done far more about climate change than I'm ever going to do. I mean, that's why I say I don't want to demonise a whole demographic. But they tend to be male, they tend to be middle and higher income, they tend to be coalition voters, as I said. A lot of them in Queensland, up on the Sunshine Coast. Warren Truss's electorate was where the guys who brought Christopher Monckton out to Australia, where they live. Now, I, in Crikey, I had a go at Tony Abbott for meeting Chris Monckton. I didn't have to go at Warren Truss because, despite the fact I fundamentally disagree with him, in a sense, it's a political survival issue for people like the Nationals, because this is their core base. So the Nationals went through the whole thing with Hansenism 10 years ago. In previous political generations, they've gone through problems with the League of Rights. So they have been under repeated attack from the right for their base. So it's an instinctive reaction on the part of the National Party to think, bloody hell, I'm going to have to cover this off and shift to the right to accommodate these people. So I've got, in a sense, I've kind of got a bit of an understanding of why the Nationals do it. Because of their age group, I mean, the thing that frustrates me immensely is these people don't have any sort of... Rupert Murdoch uses the phrase, I don't have a dog in the fight. Well, these people don't have a dog in the fight. You know, even unless they live forever, unless we discover the immortality for the next 10, 15 years, these people won't see the costs of climate change, not the real costs, and they won't pay the price for doing something about it. And in fact, under the government CPRS, which is a god-awful policy, but under the government CPRS, people like them, whether they're self-funded retirees or they're pensioners, they will be more than compensated for their costs under the CPRS. They're not going to pay a cent. So they don't have any economic stake in this, and yet they are the people who are driving this hardest. They and their media cheerleaders, and I'll get to that in a minute. And these people, just because they're older and because they're more, you know, they're middle and higher income and they're respectable people, doesn't mean they're decent or ethical people. They're not. These are the people who send abuse and death threats to climate scientists and activists. These are the people who will say and do anything. Well, they'll say anything. I don't know if they'll do anything, but they will say anything. And they will smear people of goodwill. So it's not as though they feel themselves bound by, you know, the normal rules of polite debate. And it's something that I think certainly a number of climate scientists and activists that I've met feel quite strongly. You've got to approach things properly. You've got to engage in proper debate and not get personal and not resort to the sort of things that climate denialists do, and that's absolutely true. But just bear in mind that there's this sense that you're fighting with one hand tied behind your back. And these people are supported by conservative commentators in the media and by the Australian newspaper, which is basically the sort of party newsletter for climate denialism. and by the ABC. I mean, the ABC is a facilitator, at the moment, is a facilitator of climate denialism. It gives equal airtime to denialists, not because they know what they're talking about. Very rarely do you hear a respectable, peer-reviewed climate scientist who disagrees with the consensus being interviewed on the ABC or writing an opinion piece. It's the same crowd. I mean, Andrew Bolt's got a slot on Insiders, and he uses it assiduously to promote climate denialism. If the ABC gave airtime to climate scientists who disagree with the consensus, I'd have a bit more respect for them. But it's lazy journalism to get your Andrew Bolt or your who's that bloke from Bob Carter, or the usual suspects, who don't have credentials in climate science, but who are are considered to speak with some sort of authority because they've been talking crap about it for years and years. Now, these people, I think, need to be confronted with the consequences of their actions. And they need to be confronted by young people in particular, but by all of us, to say, why are you making this attack on our future? Why are you personally doing this? Because it's personal. It's personal for our kids. It's personal for young people who are going to be paying the higher taxes and suffering the health impacts if they live in certain areas, including high mortality. And journalists need to be confronted in the same way when they give a voice to these people. And these people, I mean, they bombard climate scientists with questions. Well, I think it's time that we bombarded them with questions. Why are you doing this? What's the basis? What are you going to pay? What is your problem with doing something about climate change when you will not pay anything? You know, why is there... this is like the culture wars all over again. This is fighting over the black armband of history back in the 1990s when the right sort of launched these culture wars. But to what end? Well, it's simply to bait the left. It's to engage in a sort of parlour game because they don't have anything at stake here. And I think it's time that we turn things back on them a bit to say... the thing that is at stake here is our future, and particularly that of our kids. And that's what I mean by changing the terms of the debate, because we've talked all about the science for years and years, and we've seen public understanding of climate science and public understanding that there is a problem going down. So I think we need to, you know, I'm not saying it's cheating, but we need to rejig the debate so that it is we convey what is at stake here much more fundamentally than I think is otherwise coming across at the moment.